And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Tom.
Yay!
Yay, we're no longer riding a bicycle. We are back on three wheels, nice and as solid as ever. Right, Tom? You're going to stay with us, Tom, right? Right?
Yes, officially, I'll be here for a while, I guess.
Mm-hmm, great. Please don't leave us to go to your party you just mentioned.
Nobody knows that yet, so there
you
go.
Yep,
and this will all be in the past now.
Yes, all in the past. All right, so for this week, we decided we'd try something we don't really generally discuss because the day that we release this cast is often the day that this thing happens and screws everything over, and that is CID. And specifically, you know, the Infernals have come out. By the time you're listening to this cast, the Infernals would have probably gone through another few changes. They probably would have gained a tier list by this point and gained a Warcaster and then lost a tier list and then lost a Heavy. Who the fuck knows, right? We figured we'd talk about those.
I would like to start this podcast by saying that I think overall has been a good thing for this game. But there is still issues. Right, proceed.
I'm going to assume you meant CID and not Infernals, because, we want
Infernals Infernals, however, is a giant pile of mess. It's kind of like those videos online you see, like, just, like, horrible workplace things, like, shelves falling over, and then, like, and there's, like... The perfect thing to, like, think about, Infernals is, you know, the burning building meme when there's a dog sitting in the middle and saying, "This is fine." Every time I read Infernal CID, that's exactly what I think about.
I don't know. Actually, no, that probably works out, yeah. Like, the Infernals, I think, is an idea... Like, it's a cool idea because of the way they're pushing certain mechanics, but then you come into the problem, like, objectively speaking, or even subjectively speaking, it's very, very difficult to balance things like just making free models in general.
Look at Alexia, too. She makes, like, free-point solos that are game-breaking sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a little solo, not a war beast.
Exactly. And it's also not something tied to your warcast you just get for showing up, right? I mean, for instance, like, the mechanic ever for anyone who listens to this in the far future when Infernals have probably gone through three more changes and now basically make who the fuck knows. Infernals Horror Masters can spend Fury, or Essence, rather, to make War Beasts, which typically just... Or Horrors, rather. Which
equal
typically just,
to their Essence stat?
Yeah, which just always means that, for instance, all they do is just make the biggest guy they can make every turn, which severely, I think, devalues the ability to make anything that isn't the biggest guy per turn possible. Yeah.
Alright, first let's just stop there and think about this that mechanic for a second. So before Infernals, normally when you summon models, it's in the forms of, like, Necrosurgeons, the Spawning Vessel, and then Feet, like...
Alexia,
where you bring,
and Feet.
Bring back and Feet.
And Enigma.
So normally, most people have played through Mark II, where things that activate after they get recurred are very highly problematic. We have all played against Scarlet Mechanicals, and it was like, we killed, like, 15 models, and then Surgeons brought back 6 Mechanidra, and then my 2 heavies died with, like, Scar's feet.
Listeners may recall that this podcast... Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, Spawning Vessel... Spawning Vessel. Ooh, I made the Harrier. It killed, what's it called? It killed Eris sitting on the flag. And ran away. So, like, these things are always problematic. And I was pretty happy with the beginning of Mark III where, like, things just stopped activating and then but you still had the recursion. So it's just kind of like a delay thing, right? So your opponent have ways to play around it besides just killing, like, the source of the virus. Whereas Infernals, at the beginning, was just like, every turn, I'm going to summon a 4-cost. It's basically, if you think about it, right, a 4-cost spell that has between the range 15 to 17, depending on what master you're playing, and that can effectively kill a heavy or just kill a bunch of infantry models. So I know they said it internally tested this for a week, but, like, after just listening to that phrase again myself, it's like, how did anyone think that was ever going to be balanced?
Well, I think it actually makes a lot of sense if you just consider it with just the master involved, right? All the master does is he makes a guy. That's fine. But then you look at I've always thought the biggest problem with that package, like, was the cultists that came along with it, because they kind of implied that it was difficult to fuel up these, like, heavies you're randomly creating with your master, and then you're like, actually, it really isn't, because you're just like, you just plop it down. If you're playing Agathon, you feed. If not, you just teleport away or whatever, and then you have cultists that go in and just juice it up for the remaining focus. And the implication was that cultists are a rare resource, but they really aren't.
No, you can reliably work off two min or max units for almost an entire game. And if your opponent can't reach out and touch them, which a lot of lists that you see don't or won't.
I mean, if you think about it,
because they'd rather go and attack the things that keep spawning every turn rather than the models that fuel them.
Because they're kind of forced to, because effectively there's another heavy in their face. I mean, sometimes it's a Soulstalker, sometimes, and this was the second thing that got me with Infernals, is their better suppressor and their guns, right?
Yeah, their suppressor is silly. So it's also just the pure amount of, like, support that the lists usually bring to support these beasts.
Yeah.
The beasts by themselves aren't actually that powerful. In fact, they're not. It's the fast you can get a minimum 4+ damage swing in almost every list,
mm-hmm.
based on you can always have a Desolator because you can just summon one, and almost every caster has a damage buff of some sort. So their base power 17 heavy is power 21 in any list, and then 22 in one list, and in like mat 9.
Yeah, even
which means it's like a wrecker no matter what.
Yeah, even the like Soulstalker, which is like power 15 and maybe a power 13 on its initial, is actually quite capable of killing most heavies because it has access to 4 essence, a free charge, and bonus damage. So since then, they've like mucked around with it and they've changed it around. Now, first they made the summoning control phase only, and then they made it into a... they stopped the activation happening, so it became more like a revive game, and now they're thinking about changing it so you summon in models that can fully activate, but they are damaged. And I think
the damage will be different, so instead of being one less dice to hit in damage, it might be -2 to hit, -2 to damage, and then they cannot run or charge. And so each layer of the damage web, as they call it, well, they're playing with what those effects are based on what you lose.
Yeah,
which is why they'll now start with only the bottommost ring, which means it's alive, but it's like its least capable form, which means they have to pay to make it more efficient.
Yeah, it's a funny mess regardless, but I think this touches on one thing with a couple of things with CID. First is that a lot of this comes down to it is kind of hard to balance a war game just plain simple, right? It has to be set out there. Because a lot of things that, especially a game like War Machine, where you have models that, frankly, will come across as insanely unbalanced, but in the grand context of the game, are actually quite, like, okay to have. Like, when you think about it, models like everyone's favorite, Alexia, are actually ridiculous. Like, the amount of things you can do, and especially in her even more crazy versions, right? The things you can do with a model that only costs 10 points, which includes, like, just randomly killing heavies or casters, or just providing an infinite value engine, or having an incredibly hard-to-kill model, right? You're just like, this probably isn't actually okay, but in the grand context of the game, it works out. Similar thing here with the heavies. Most people have problems with this mechanic, have problems with it for different reasons. You've got the people who basically dislike the idea that effectively they can get randomly bombed by a heavy at any point in time, and then you've got other people who dislike the fact that their cool trick that they can do to summon a random heavy when they need it, because they'll probably need it where the faction is designed, is instead hamstrung by the fact the heavy is just, you know... how should I put it? It just will do nothing, so it feels like you're still always on the back foot, or you're just prolonging the game unnecessarily.
So you have two people on each side of the fence. One who's afraid of the effect that bringing a heavy that can completely activate with all of its buffs onto the field at any time can do to a game. And then there's people who are playing with it, which are like, the whole heavy system has been designed around the fact that you can bring them back, which is why they're Very easy to kill, very low damage base, and require buffs to do anything. And so if you can't get that train rolling, or if that train gets delayed too long, it doesn't feel like it's effective in any way or shape or form. So both sides are complaining. And I mean, when you're doing stuff like this, people often make the claim that, like, if both sides go away unhappy, then I guess you come with the best compromise. Mm. But when you're doing game balance, is compromise exactly what you want?
Yeah, because a lot of the time you also kind of want fun.
And well, you want the mechanic to be interesting, or else what's the point of playing it?
Exactly, and that's the problem. It's just like, at this point, you're like, well, why play Infernals? I mean, I guess now the reason to play Infernals is so that you can play better Signar or better Crucible Guard, but...
We'll get to that later.
We'll get to that, or better Kador. Even then, like, you're like, why play this over, say, any random Hordes faction? This doesn't feel like Arcana did, where Arcana were a very interesting dynamic, and a change to the way the game used to work because of how they replaced feats.
And Arcana were very, I think, much more... They're much lower in terms of effect to the game than summoning, because that's like changing the very attrition of the game, where they just altered an already existing mechanic called feats.
Yeah.
And people argued they were OP, and other people argued they weren't OP, and that was actually pretty accurate because you got a bunch of effects that were almost feat level and other effects that were... like subtext of some feats.
Mm.
And the nice balance of those made it that you had to choose which of those effects you thought would be most useful and learn to play with them, regardless of how effective they might be. Like Dreamer's Trump Arcana is still fucking garbage, but once in a while you'll use it in a game and it'll actually do something.
I'm still to this day remember when I got my model knocked down, when it killed the objective and he triggered fucking all four down.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, I think I'm just dead.
So I guess the first question we ask ourselves is, if you just don't think about summoning and just look at those heavy chassis by themselves, where would you rank them in the grand scheme of things out of like amongst all the heavies in this game?
You know what? That's
like, are they the worst heavies in the game by themselves if you cannot summon them?
I disagree because
their basic stats, like defensive stats of the two like crab heavies are 10-18, or are they
11-18?
So 11-18 is like not great, but it is the same stats as a Toro, a suppressor, and a what's the other one?
A Vindicator.
A Vindicator. That's the same stats, and those models are completely playable, but they do have slightly less offensive stats. But the Desolator gun is so fucking good, that model's probably fine at its whatever point.
I'll put it this way, right? A Desolator is better than almost any Crucible Guard heavy.
Its power is lower, but it's just got a...
its power actually isn't lower. It's the same power as a Suppressor.
Well, a Suppressor goes up to 14. Well, it goes up to 12.
No. It starts at 14. It has crap pincer claws.
No, I'm talking about its spray.
Oh, the spray, yeah, okay, right, yeah. Well,
but yes, it's melee. They start at the same power, but that's fine.
Yeah, I mean that to me is like
That's a good heavy. Yeah. That's a good heavy.
The Desolator to me carries the faction like one way. Whatever form this faction will eventually end itself out, and that is
the Soul Stalker's interesting and useful in faction, and the crab heavy that does melee stuff is probably terrible.
The funny thing is
outside of faction.
The funny thing is to me the Soulstalker feels actually like the heavies they were talking about, and the Desolator feels like the heavies you're gonna end up with due to the way you design games. Like, the Soulstalker is probably a heavy you're allowed to summon because it is not good. Its stats are trash, its damage output is actually quite low, and
well, it's like an Archidon, right?
It's like a worse Archidon?
Well, it's got the same power.
No, 13, 15. Archidon's at least a...
No, it's a 15.
Ah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
An Archidon's 10 cost. How much is a Soulstalker?
13.
Yeah, so it's a bit more expensive, but Archidon doesn't have, like, I give souls to my caster.
And, yeah.
They both have Serpentine.
So, the point is... I'm trying to get across, like, these heavies are not terrible by themselves, even without the summoning stuff, right?
I would say the melee one's like, pretty bad.
Yeah, sure. They're slightly below the curve, but sure. So are Legion heavies, so nobody talks about those.
I mean...
You're right.
No one is allowed to talk about those, I agree. Hey, yeah. Legion have a good heavy. So
even without summoning, these heavies are playable.
Yes.
And so now you add summoning, and then you think about it, right? Well, P-Dax only brings back one thing a game, but I can four fury to summon one of these garbage Legion heavies.
I like it. All right, everyone.
Let me tell
Dark
you,
Guidance has concluded
the
that the total cost of a Legion heavy is equal to one cultist. No, sorry, I take that back. Half a cultist.
Okay.
That's what a Legion heavy is worth.
I want to ask people to think about this. If Legion just got to summon like 11 A-teams every turn for like like non-character, non-flying war beasts every turn for like
okay,
equal
good,
to their
good that you added non-flying.
I don't think people would care.
Yeah. I don't think you're right.
Maybe.
Chris, let's just ask, let me ask you, like, right, what successful list have you played recently? What good list?
Okay, Aldwych 2 with Wolves of Winter. So, Doom Reapers, right?
Let's say your Oracle's Annihilation's opponent playing Veil 2, right, gets to summon a Carnivian Chassis every turn. Do you care?
I actually do care, and you want to know why? Because I might berserk into my own Doom Reavers and kill them, and it'll be very awkward.
And that's
a big problem, right? Like, I mean, how many Doom Reavers do you commit onto these heavies, right?
Yeah, like, so, like, that was my first... So my initial impression of CID was, like, Inferno, like, because I didn't think about summoning that much. I just read the stats and, like, well, these are, like, really bad Legion heavies. Like, why would anyone play this faction?
Yeah.
And then, like... And then we put it into context with, like, the solos and then the summoning and then, like, this... And then all the nominos where, like, everyone gets buffed and super threat. And it's like, this is broken as fuck.
Oh, no, yeah.
We should just refer to them as tallest, beefiest, and hat lady.
Smartest.
Sure.
Sure.
All right.
Or shadowiest, of the two.
Sure. So, like, the synergy guy, right? Obviously, he's like, where have I... played this before where a caster that buffs shitty models and then I have a way to summon shitty models and make them better and faster. And it's like, this sounds really similar to something they got rid of like 3-4 years ago. It's like,
yep.
Why would you bring this back? Like, if you want this back, you don't need to make a new faction. You just tell all the Crispler. Hey, you guys can, the Mechanthros are back to PS15 combo strikes and speed and they can activate when you bring them back with Necrosurgeons. It's the poachers. If they just said that, we could just cancel this whole CID. We could just go play Crips, right?
So this gets into one thing with CID, and generally speaking, with the way it's changed, is how they've tried to tweak models. And I guess this is more on a faction-by-faction basis, but when you think about it, so summoning, we can just agree, is, at base level, was completely busted to one degree or another, right?
Yes, because worst case is a feat.
Best case,
it wins the game.
Yeah. Now, the question here is then, okay, so how do you tweak this mechanic? And you could tweak it by either tweaking the models themselves that get summoned. Like, the fact is that, simply put, Infernals have access to significantly more damage buffs than... Infernals actually are a great example of how to fix Legion heavies. Easy. Just give the Carnivian Withering Ash. Or Withering Death, or whatever it's called.
Or why not just give them Rage like they've always asked?
Like, yeah, and you're like, okay, bam, faction fixed. You're like, okay, well, that's how we made these Legion heavies actually.
That would have fixed Legion, because you still think to yourself, like, I can take garbage heavies or ogres. I'll take ogres next.
Yeah. Well, you can take garbage
heavies about it for like 5 minutes longer, and it's like, why did I waste 5 minutes of my life?
Because I want to give Golab Rage, okay? Why would you just deny me that?
I mean, I guess.
Except that's too many points. You can't have a Blightbringer, Golab, and...
Alright, this is not a Primal Terrors podcast.
Yes, this is no longer a Primal Terrors.
Legion heavies are terrible.
But I guess Primal Terrors is one of the ones to bring up with CID. But we'll go into that later. But yeah, in the case of, like, so one of the issues is you can tweak the models themselves, you can make the heavies worse, you can make the ability to actually give them focus off you, summon them harder, like was originally intended, so it's a bit more of a risk-reward mechanic. Or you can tweak the mechanic itself, which is kind of what they've been doing instead. And through CID, they've been doing... CID itself, like, this is a bit more of a feels-good, feels-bad idea of basically which way you want to approach this. I'm not 100% sure with Infernals, but I think the problem is, like, now, to me, the faction is not even a compromise. It feels like everyone's unhappy with it. And I'm not...
I don't understand, right? Like, what are they trying to achieve with the summoning mechanic? Do they just want people to have a P DAX speed every turn? Or do they, like, want people to just, like, feel janky and play Mark II again? like, what is... There's, like, there's no way to make anyone happy, right? Because if you make it so they're like Mark II mechanic, bro, they're like, oh, this is stupid. I thought we moved on to a better place now. And why are we back here?
Mm.
But then if you would go the other way around, it's like, well, this is also stupid. I'm just sitting here playing P-Dags as a faction.
I mean, it's basically model goes off, model comes back. Model goes off, model comes back. Model goes off, model comes back.
Yeah, like, that playstyle is very good. You win a lot of games that way, but it is incredibly boring. You're just like, da-da-da, like, make models, put them in good positions, and make opponent have to come into me. Yay!
Eventually, your opponent runs out of ways to actually kill them, or burns all their resources, and then you win. And you're like, I'm so good at War Machine, oh my goodness. Yeah, I can respect the idea, though, to create Infernals with a new mechanic in terms of resources and like. And I think, honestly, the Essence system is quite salvageable. But it does require tweaking, I think, the models themselves and the mechanics baseline. Because, simply put, to me, the whole thing with the Infernals is that they feel like they should burn out, whereas in practice they really don't.
No, they're a rolling avalanche instead.
Yeah.
Where they actually build as the game goes on. Where during the initial, like, talking about how the mechanic was supposed to work, it was supposed to be, you're supposed to have a really strong early to mid game, and then by the end of the game you were supposed to be having a hard time. I think, honestly, the reason why it's so powerful is because it's so easy to get that essence back, where it's supposed to be, where the way they talked about it is supposed to be a much rarer or more valuable asset, mm-hmm. where those models that you're using to sacrifice are supposed to be rare and important to you, where I just see people take a bunch of cultists of all the solos they need, and they never seem to have any issue
getting
that essence train rolling. And part of that was maybe the list I was playing, where I wasn't able to reach out and touch that side of the table. Maybe that affects it, but it does seem to be what a lot of people are saying, is that the game never seems to slow down like they intended it to.
No, it isn't just you. Like, simply put, it's just really hard to actually... Like, it's about... Imagine how hard it is to actually physically get to, like, Menoth Choir. If they're being played smart... then you, even if the choir are buffing Warjacks, you won't be able to pick off too many of them.
Because I don't see people even using cultists as the melee. They just summon heavies and lights, and they just do all the work, and then they sit back, and the cultists are just like, yeah, cheerleaders at the back doing whatever they need to for the next round of summons.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's not so difficult.
So they are more of a choir. Like, they describe them as choir, but they're like, combat choir that fight and do stuff. But they never actually fight and do stuff. They just choir.
Because you run out of cultists, whereas instead you could just not. And then you'd be good.
You were saying, Tom?
Yeah, I mean... No, it's just like... They need to figure out what they want, like, the... They need to pick direction for something, right? Like, big problem people, I think, have before, right? Like you guys said. Yeah, they were supposed to be this out. I was pretty excited to play them only, like, got the, like, the sneak peek previews. Like, oh, I was really excited because I thought it was going to be, like, an Assyria type of playstyle where it's, like, you were going to be, like, super powerful, like, for the first three turns, and then, like, if you don't win the game by then, you're going to struggle, right? And then, like, they release all the details, and then people thought about it for, like, a day, and it's like, wait a minute, this is the exact opposite, where it's like, if I don't lose the game by turn three, they can't win.
Can't lose at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. That's not entirely true. Like, Agathon has, like, some of the worst defensive stats of a Warcaster ever, so there's always team shovel. There's always game shovel. That is...
Have you seen Assyria's stats?
Assyria has Arcane Vortex and, like, rules. I mean, to be fair, Agathon also has, if you kill a cultist, I will cast teleport and get the fuck out of there, so have fun with
that. Well, that didn't happen, so...
Yeah. I mean, currently it does. By the time this podcast rolls out, who the fuck knows what Agathon's going to actually end up with?
Plus, I don't always like the caster being the linchpin of the list as a good game design, because it's just like, then it just becomes like, let's see who can kill the caster fastest every game.
Yeah.
And that's not always fun.
Me, by the way.
Yes, I know, but that's your game style, but not necessarily, like, how often do you see Chris go first? Oh, like, look at Frawley. Frawley, like, never goes for assassinations unless it's, like, literally...
I mean,
super easy. It's, like, literally almost guaranteed, or it's...
Can we just talk about that? All right, so Frawley, for one of our friends, is, like, one of the... I'm going to be honest. I think he might be one of the worst beta testers I've ever heard of. But in this case, I get the... I wonder if the reason he wants Infernals to succeed is so that, quite simply put, he can finally break 200 kill points in a 100 point in a 75 point game. And you know what? That's a good goal. That is a fraud.
That is how this game currently works.
Yes.
And I don't mind that. I like the idea that this is a faction that produces a lot of units. I just don't think that the attrition is at the right rate to make that effective or good for the game.
Yeah.
They aren't losing heavies fast enough to make it efficient. They're too efficient long term, where they need to have some way to come back for the rest of the game.
Takes a while to kill Carnivians.
Well, even then, if it's free, like, then you're literally always going to be wasting models. Like, unless you can actually kill a Carnivian with one attack, that's a berserk attack somehow. All right, like that's what you're dealing.
Or you have to have such high attrition numbers. Like the only other like. So, a perfect example of this is, like, you bring a child and a skin, this child and skin and bones, and the child and skin and bones are quite capable of killing two Legion heavies in one turn.
Yes.
Which is, like, the only way you kind of come back against this faction is when you can use one model to kill two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, easy example, I think, to be fair, and this is one thing I'd like to go into with CID, is that most CIDs, it seems, have some kind of model, mechanic, or thing that just warps the entire CID. Infernals, I think, is unique in that it's had multiple of them. The first was Heart of Darkness, which, for the benefit of listeners, was effectively a traitor theme, which allowed you to fully splash your Infernal models with Sigma, Cador, or Crucible.
Well, not fully. Essentially, you had a Crucible... Cador or Signar caster who could take three solos and two units from their faction in a battle group and then essentially splash in
infernal models into the list. Yes, which was incredibly ridiculous because there was no problems doing stuff like howlers, for what it's worth, are rather underutilized in Infernals.
Well, so I think the problem with that is that theme was never intended really to be part of the Infernal CID, or at least that's the claim, because it's supposed to be part of the Oblivion CID, which
the
is
one next one,
which
yeah.
is the next one, which is about the war in general, in which they are implying
splash
that there are
basically.
They're implying that there's going to be some sort of splash type of models going into the normal factions that are supposed to be anti-Infernal, so mostly Morrowind and implied possibly other god stuff, but we don't know. We don't know what it is. So right now, Heart of Darkness looks broken as fuck, but if the whole game moves in that direction, then it is power creep, but it's a lateral power creep rather than a vertical power creep.
I think that's fine.
That is good. That's good for the game. If everybody gets something to that level or power, and everyone gets their own version, or at least gets enough new things that give you that kind of feel or thing, I think it'll be fine. We won't know until that one comes up, so if we want to, we'll come back and revisit it later. But right now, Heart of Darkness is broken as fuck, because it just makes you...
For normal people speaking, that is called Mark II list building.
Yes.
I don't know, forget that. It's called Mark II Who's the Boss list building, with full control over your caster.
I mean, I play some Haley 2 list that have like 5 Sigdar models, so...
Exactly.
That is basically what Heart of Darkness literally reminded me of, like Haley 2 that I used to play. It's like, let's take Thor and then Scar. Well, Mark 2, you didn't even have to take another Jack. It's like, well, let's take Thor and Squire and then fail the rest of Mercs.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas this one is basically like, let's take a Victor, some Winter God, and oh, look at that, some Howlers, let's go.
It's End of yeah. It's like Mark II and early Mark One, Mark III.
But the reason I brought up, like, as I said, like, before it was summoning, was Heart of Darkness. And then, you know, now Infernal's probably, when they fix summoning, is going to have something else people complain about.
The one thing they did right was that they took into a lot of consideration the OP solos that they originally released.
Yeah, they did.
A lot of the stuff that was problematic has been touched on or is getting adjusted as we speak. What it looks like now might be completely different than what it'll look like when this podcast release. So I don't know if it's worth it, but they did. People were like, Direct Spirits is a problem. So they're like, okay, we're getting rid of Direct Spirits. Awesome Cav model guy who has all of the rules.
Fallen Knight.
Yeah. He's got debuffed a little. I don't know if it's enough, but it's something.
Can I actually just speak about Fallen Knight
sure.
for a moment here? Because I think he's one of the secret parts of this problem that no one really talks about. So when you think about it, right, what are one of two ways to deal with heavies? One is you can kill them, and the other is you can control them. Like, you can disrupt a Warjack, for instance. You could freeze and knock out the cortex of things back in the day, or even just, like, force them to spend focus. Because of the existence of this guy, Valen Hawk, the Fallen Knight, you actually can't do that at all to Infernals. And most Infernals' beasts, by the way, are also Eyeless Sight. So you can't blind them, stationary them, or knock them down. Doubly so, because half of the beasts are also steady or serpentine. In fact, maybe all of them are. I think this guy inadvertently has made it a big problem for Infernal. Like, you can't have that now as a mechanic of how to basically handle the avalanche of models coming in. And this is, like, one of those things with CID where I feel like one of the main problems with what they've done with CID is that since the Grimkin one that they first came out with, they've massively shortened the length of how long these CIDs are. Now, by the time you listen to this podcast, routinely they are 3 weeks, regardless of whether they are, say,
or
something
less.
Like...
Some of them
or less,
are two.
Yeah. Regardless of whether it's a couple of models, a sub-faction, or in this case, a completely new faction...
With completely new mechanics.
Yes.
And then they even removed some of the total amount because they had not intended to be in it. But regardless, we're testing a single theme force.
Yeah. And even then... That's
and three top. Casters.
Three casters.
So, which is two less than most of the other factions.
Well, think about it. Even when the other thing gets actually released, you know, the Oblivion CID happens, is that also going to be
It's going to be Christmas all over again.
Yeah, it's going
to
be...
Because I remember the problem with Christmas was that they had too many different places to look at.
Yeah.
So they were looking at Signar, Kator, like every faction got a release. So they were looking at all the interactions of every faction with every model that was released. And some of them could... So it was just too much. And they were just like, okay, for the next time, we're going to split this in two.
Yeah.
Because it was too much for them. Mm-hmm. Which is completely fair because that's a lot of models to look at. And Heart of Darkness by itself could use its own CID.
Yes, simply put, like... That
regardless of
Oblivion will be like the first 100 models CID section, where it's like we have to look at everything that's possibly taken the Sneak Force.
Because Heart of Darkness by itself is already like a huge CID required, but then if what they've kind of alluded to and our guess is correct, then it implies that every faction's going to be going not just those three and Infernals.
Yeah, that. Is makes it so much better. It really does. Like, at least
so the problem, like, there's always been problems with the CID process. Like, it's overall, it's great. Overall, I think it's better. I think it's moved the game. I think there is.
Yeah, actually,
again, I think there is what we've called power creep in this game, but I don't think it's bad power creep. It's power creep that's lateral, and every new CID makes the faction better. And it progresses the overall meta because the meta is forced react. And this stuff isn't so powerful that it's usually game-breaking, with the exception of like a couple things that have ever come out. And a couple things like Lord of the Feast, who's slightly above the curve and probably a point.
I am not 100% sure if we released the last podcast before Lord of the Feast killed War Machine and the Hordes General. But
yeah.
If we didn't, then let us then remark on our new game, of course, Lord of the Feast.
Anyway, so the game... Each new CID release usually releases a very set of strong, impactful models that forces the meta to get up, look at their list, change them, adjust, and make up. And they're going to be a huge part of the meta for like the next 6 months, and then the next group of stuff will have started to replace it, and those things will become abnormal. So right now, Circle's looking like a huge problem, but give us a couple months, and we'll probably be looking at the next set of CID models that'll become the new boogeyman, and people will be used to Tharn.
I don't know what Tom's doing there, but
I'm sure it's just for Hickling's benefit, you know, more like, bang.
Yeah, pretty much there. I mean, for my part, like, everyone is sort of used to, inverted commas, Primal Terrors, and yet
but Primal Terrors is still good. People are
No, they're not.
Yeah, that's the catch, right? No, they really aren't, right?
Oh, they're not
just
good?
Say, no, no, not that they're not good, though, that they're not used to, and Primal Terrors is explored, again, in air quotes, because those lists still have a lot of damn, like, friggin' depth, and more importantly, those lists also change as well with new releases.
Exactly, or just in responses to new releases.
I mean,
like, you can't just keep the same list forever anymore. It's not Mark II, where you could use essentially the same Gatsby 2 from the beginning of Mark II to the end of Mark II, which the only reason he was forced to change lists in most cases is because it got nerfed, not that it actually ended up changing that much.
Yeah, agreed.
But for the most of Mark II, he was the same list.
Sorry,
yeah,
Tom.
If you play Gatsby 2, if you're like a good Gatsby 2 player, you could have just played that same list for the entirety of Mark 2.
Completely the same. Doesn't matter if, like, you can't bring back the hag or anything, no matter.
But now the game is much more balanced. Things aren't usually, like, if there was, like, a scale and the middle was zero, you're not going to see so much going way off in the up, and instead of, like, in the middle is 25 and the top is 50 and the bottom is 0. You're seeing a lot more stuff in the 25 area and not much sitting up at the 50 or at the 0, and because of that, you're seeing a much closer game.
I'm going to disagree on some part of that, because you do have models that, frankly, just get through, i.e. models
of
peace.
Yeah, some do, but it's not to the same extent, and they eventually get fixed or adjusted or...
Yeah,
so well,
that
I mean,
part is definitely true. Like,
so it does. It's not, it does. If something is unbalancing the wheel, it usually gets adjusted.
And that part was Tom leaving the cast to presumably go party with 2D anime girls or whatever you do in Japan, which I think he's in Japan right now, or he's in Texas, or both. Frankly, it's Tom. Anyhow, yeah, like there are like for all the complaints though you could have about models like say, well, as I said, Lord of the Feast, Tridents. Other shit like that, really. There is, generally speaking, a better model design, I believe, as a result of CID, because even if you have models that are powerful, they're also designed to be sort of more fun and interesting. The mechanics, the reasons they even decide to go down this road.
I've heard some arguments where sometimes models get toned down or they become more just number values rather than interesting concepts and ideas.
That's true, actually, and I think it's...
So I think you get a bit of both, and I think that's the problem with CID sometimes, is because we are essentially designing by committee, and the committee is community-wide, it's not just a bunch of core designers in a room, and that's not a problem. We've seen what kind of design you get out of that, and you tend to get a lot of really interesting ideas and concepts, but you don't necessarily get, but you get a wild, much more wild swing in terms of actual game balance, and wild is... like, air quotes wild, because it's not that wild in terms of other games I've played. But in terms of this game and compared to CID, you would call them much more wild swings in terms of actual balance. And you can see that quite literally just before we started going into CID, we saw a bunch of releases for a bunch of factions, and one of those things was Una 2. And Una 2 would never have gotten through CID, as an example.
No, that's another one, too, like... One of the things I think CID does allow you to do, and it's, I think, one of the reasons why Infernals is a good one to bring up, CID allows you to do actual things you do in video game beta testing. For instance, you can do the first iteration of a model is the most broken version you can think of, which makes sense for Infernals, right? You look at it, all the models were at their peak. Cultists were cheap. Fallen Knight had long shadows at, like, -5 range. You had both theme forces access to and a fully armed and operational summoning mechanic. And then they've toned it back accordingly. Now, to some, they might get used to the juice that was, like, the very first iteration of summoning, which I can understand, frankly, as someone who played around with it, even just using the Lesser Warlock, or Infernal Master, whatever the princess's name is, right? It was fun as shit. Like...
It's a fun mechanic.
It is really fun.
It's dynamic, it's interesting, it's thought-provoking. On both sides of the table, I've played against it. I'm not as much as experience as I'd like for this type of discussion, but that's what I've got to draw on. And it was interesting to play against. It was, like, it made you think, but I was also like, hey, okay, if we're going to play this game, I need you to record how much points you started with, how many points I've killed, how many points you summoned, and how many points you ended this game with. And I honestly don't remember the numbers, but the only reason the game ended is because I was actually able to kill Agathon with his, like, victim stats.
Yeah.
But that game was slowly going into the kind of course we talked about earlier, where as the game went on, those horrors weren't disappearing. They were slowly building in numbers, and eventually I was just going to be out of attrition because the only option I had was to take the, oh my god, I need to kill Agathon route.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, it's like, my version of fun and enjoyment and interaction was probably also warped because of the list I was playing, right?
Well, you got to play, like, Dream Kador.
I got to play them.
Because you know what makes a lot of sense? So, Vlad 2 has a feat, and it's, like, all about awakening the hidden blood of kings within, like, all of his Kador.
He wrote some fan fiction. Look, demons are fine. Demons have blood, okay? But they do have blood.
And you can't tell me that that blood may or may not be Kadoran. You don't know. You don't know what demon fucked what Kadoran went like 300 years ago.
I was
going to
say that, frankly, it was just made with the blood of Kadorans. Sure, that too. They just killed a bunch of them and made them into demons. But yeah, you know, like, that was fine. It was fine. Maybe their souls originally were, you know, Kadoran in nature. The important thing, though, is that, again, that's
or
quite
the
a
souls they were made out of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, Infernals are soul sculptors, for people who are not aware of. But again, like, you have to approach it with that kind of thing. And to me, it was a CID game for kicks, right? But again, one person's version of fun is quite highly subjective, and I've always liked more dynamic models in general.
Like, some people really enjoy playing Haley 1.
Yeah,
but you know who really hates playing against Haley 1? Most other people.
Exactly, right?
Including other Haley 1 players, probably.
Yeah, I mean, Haley 1...
That's probably miserable.
I mean, Haley 1 forces you to look in the mirror sometimes, and that's just awful, because it's like the picture of Dorian Gray. But as a result of that, like, one of the things with CID is that CID is trying to basically make a game that has just either more fun or interesting for the community as a whole. And again, that means that you have to factor in all aspects and members of said community.
And I don't envy PP's job right now with Infernals, because really they are sitting on this balance of how do we make this brand new mechanic and faction interesting and balanced. In terms of game play. And so there's different ways you can go about that. You can do that by adjusting the models in the faction, or you can go about that by adjusting the rules. And as we can see, the rules by themselves are already really shaky in terms of game balance, because they're essentially returning to a very Mark II style play where you're bringing back models that completely function and operate and have a mobile, essentially, position in where you can place them and then have them activate from. And that's why we've started to see them playing rather than with adjusting the models themselves. They've chosen to start messing with the mechanic because we've already kind of seen where that mechanic can lead.
Yeah.
And so they've decided that while it might change the overall interesting dynamicness of that mechanic, it will bring out a more balanced game style. And a lot of people we've spoken to specifically have decided that that is not necessarily the correct choice, and that is up for debate, but it definitely means that it makes the faction much less interesting and makes people question whether it'll be worth even playing at the end if it's just kind of like War Machine Light.
Well, yeah, that's the thing we don't want, and I hope they actually do nail this to one degree or another. We at least get a compromise that gets everyone happy, because I mean, shout out to Frolo and a couple of other people who've, like, gone about this and usually have had to put up with their rants at, like, 4 a.m. or reading them afterwards, which has been rather funny. But, like, the complaint is basically, like, if you want to make a mechanic like that not be overpowered, you can fiddle with the numbers instead, and you can try and basically make it so that when your heavies spawn, they don't kill whatever they touch. Which was always the implication that they don't kill whatever they touch.
But that's not the case.
But it's not the case.
Because we've already talked about, in this faction, there's a 4+ damage swing, and in other cases a hit swing as well.
Yeah.
Which, not as high as the power swing, but in most cases heavies.
Frankly, it's good enough, right?
Yeah, like, it's generally that the swing is effective enough that makes things mute. Yeah. So you're able to create free points that are able to remove most other heavies of various values off the table.
Yeah, but this again
and
is
at,
like,
at a range that, and at a threat range that makes it very hard to play around.
Yeah, exactly. But again, this is like this is a very much a case of like how does like play versus feel, like how does this feel as a mechanic, and people have different opinions on that, right? Because as you could actually tell from Tom when he was talking, right? Like he was just wistfully thinking of those days when you had the Sepulture and it could carpet bomb its three torpedoing mechanothralls. And as I was going to say earlier, that's the reason we even started this podcast.
Is because that was obscene.
It was insane.
Because you just had an incredibly accurate, incredibly high hitting, incredibly like just long threat range.
Just
you had the Kraken walk, drop the things, do whatever
Sepulcher,
drop whatever it wanted. And then those things got to go for, like, a 10-inch...
The gun had crit paralysis as well, which was even more funny, because sometimes you shot the target, you paralyzed it, so then it was super dead.
Yeah, but you're usually playing with something like Scar 1, so it was just boosted... So it was just additional die to hit and just plus 5 damage.
Sometimes it was Gorshade 3, and Gorshade, he also froze them, so yeah.
It doesn't matter. It was just obscene, and I can see why people are worried about it, because you create that mechanic... we are talking about with like large bases and medium bases with different stuff. And there's also questions about how effective those beasts are. And I think that's where the numbers argument comes in, is like just for what you're doing and what points you pay is they're still too effective.
Yeah, I agree.
Like the fact that like, so the light war beast, let's get into, is incredibly effective for what it does.
So there is two light war beasts. One of them is the Lamenta, which is the one with the scything talons, basically. It's the flying punchy beast. And then there's my favorite, which is the Shrieker, which is just...
the Isle of Sight model with more eyes than any other model in the game.
Yeah, it's a truce. It's got basically a gun that's range 10, power 13, and monitor. And that doesn't sound like much, except, again, you summon it, so...
For free. And it's...
And monitor...
And you're like, okay, that's not so bad, because it gets, like, one or two activations, and then it disappears. Well, I'm like... Yes, except that you usually get, like, the princess usually has her own, like, cult of cultists sitting around her just going, like, okay, that's another light war beast completely for free. So in my game against Agathon, she had, like, three of those by the end of the game.
I summoned four when I played.
So you had five total?
Five total. One of them popped because, actually, one of them died, and then I had three Shriekers. Now, to be fair, as of the recording of this podcast... Princess Go, what's her face, can only
summon one,
right? This is probably with good reason, because, yeah.
Became way too... So, and then if you, with those, you have the Amonisher, and you're like, so it's actually very good at fighting against infantry, because it does one Pow-Tav, and then a bunch of Pow-Tens, 1 to 3 Pow-Tens, that kills a bunch of infantry.
But then
you add Curse of Shadows onto that, and then it becomes 14, 12, 12, 12, which becomes
15.
Even,
it's 13 base.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so
it becomes even more effective at killing infantry. So even, like, base high armor infantry, they're kind of like, Pow-Tens are not so scary, or suddenly like, oh, okay, this is fucked.
Yeah. This is one of those things with numbers you can argue, because, again, like, this gun can be trash or can be treasure, and a lot of it will come down to basically how you muck
around
with
that model is treasure.
Yeah, currently it's treasure, but, again, like, it's kind of like the Siege Chariot. All it needs is two numbers more, and then the model went from a joke to being a range 10 slam gun, smite gun, just casually. So one of the things I think with CID I'd like to talk about is how I think it's changed the community. And specifically also how it's, like, warped the factions. And to some degree, this is probably my biggest problem with it, is I dislike how it's sort of brought out the faction tribalism in a lot of cases. Because now CID is... When CIDs first started, especially when the first CIDs had nothing to do with factions, like, there were whole things like, remember that old delightful argument regarding proxy bases? Or the old thing, like, the first CID was actually Grimkin, which at the time no one had bought
into
yet.
Was this the first CID?
I believe so. I think it was Grimkin, then Steamroller would be my guess.
No, I thought, like, Signar and stuff came up before that.
No, Grimkin. It was Grimkin.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Yeah.
The Grimkin one was
Grimkin
very
pissed
long.
Me off, because, and I still hate it to this day, because they're like, let's test this brand new faction, and then do a completely new scenario packet
that's completely ignored after
the things we tested in Grimkin. So you're just like, oh, all of these things that we tested don't necessarily apply to the game anymore.
Yeah, especially because we were also disallowed to use the beta testing rules from SR 2019 with Grimkin, or 18, or whatever it was at the time.
So yes.
But yeah, it's gone from that. The CIDs have gone shorter, and because factions are now involved, people have now started equating the idea of complaining equaling buffs.
I don't think it's actually that effective.
I agree, but unfortunately, people don't, which means that it turns...
So just the idea that it might work?
Yes.
And is toxic?
Yeah, because of how it shapes into an us versus them situation. Fuck, I've been... When I played, like, an ancestral... Supreme Guardian.
Supreme Gentleman, thank
Supreme
you.
Gentleman, right? During
the most
test.
Gentleman.
Well, he was very gentle, and then I gave him an extra 2 strength, and he was significantly less gentle. I said, oh, it might be a bit too much on the Supreme Gentleman. And I was just... I remember getting called out of, like, oh my god, higher level War Machine player is now directly trying to fight the Supreme Gentleman in his balance.
Yeah, they want to nerf Scorn because Scorn... Because people think that people hate Scorn.
And I'm like, you have no idea how little I care about Scorn.
It's like Chris's second faction, so if any faction other than Kadoria he wants to get buffs, it's probably Scorn.
Yeah, I mean, I might actually start playing it again or, like, take my models back, but I'm like, why would I care about this? I mean, I just said, like, it was something I noted was that the effects of having +2 strength on the Supreme Guardian, gentlemen, meant that it was killing heavies, which was always sort of one of its design weaknesses.
I don't think anybody goes into CID going, and we need to sabotage this. Sometimes you go into CID and go, well, this is fucking broken, we need to fix this. Like, Lord of the V should have been.
Yes.
But, you know, sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes...
Oh, no, people try to sabotage my Lord of the Feast. You're like, you know what, we frankly probably should have.
Well, no, because I think, again, sabotage is the right word, because sometimes you want to see cool stuff on the table, you want to see powerful stuff on the table, you want to see thought-provoking stuff. The problem is, Lord of the Feast is probably not thought-provoking, he's just like, oh my god, I want this model to disappear forever.
Yeah, well,
and again, I think the most eloquent way to solve that problem is just give him 1 inch reach.
There's a lot of ways. Like,
there's lots of ways. I mean, just like that one because it's easy, simple, and it actually just makes counterplay playable.
Well, better, yeah, definitely. I mean,
a shield guard finally works. The problem is right now, like, the most, like, obvious answer to him should be a shield guard, and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, for my part, personally, I've always, I've thought that Tharn CID should have been, this is an example of, like, things with CIDs, like, well, This is a great argument, but it's very much like too little, too late. I think the entire Tharn CID should have been predicated on the assumption that the Crockpot was friendly faction. It didn't work on, like, Tharn models. Because it was cute when it worked on, like, Cro-Mac 2, and when Tharn were sort of a fringe list. And, like, oh, it's a cool synergy and, like, but the simple fact is that the Crockpot was not properly considered in CID. And that, honestly, might be a common trend among a lot of the models that we talk about from time to time, that feel like they came through CID and just were like, what the fuck happened here? Another example is the Hellmouth, which was never really meant to be talked about in Primal Terrors. In fact, there was a gag order on talking about Hellmouths in Primal Terrors, even though they were a very integral part of the PT list.
I don't even mind the Crockpot. I like the Crockpot. I've talked about this before with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But the Crockpot I like because it makes some things more functionable because...
Yeah.
I don't like its interaction with Ravagers. That's my problem with it. Not with the solos in the units.
Yeah, I don't mind it's, say, Bridget and Cole, for instance.
Or I don't even mind it with Lord of the Feast, again.
I mean, Bridget and Cole are units, well, but ignore it.
But it's because I don't think Ravagers are balanced with corpses properly.
No, even Blood Pack aren't, I feel, because, like...
Maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them on the table enough to say.
I have. I'll be honest. Like, when you're mat 6 dudes, you're like, yep, you're mat 6. I'm going to boost it anyway.
Anyways.
Fuck it.
Yes, the corpse mechanic, the way they have it, is very interesting and very good, but a problem, and that's good that they've decided to go with a method that gives a more interesting gameplay style, but at the same time, I think as the game has progressed, we've seen that there are stats on those models that are not balanced around having free boosts and buys and free corpses from stuff all day.
Exactly, yeah. And especially like
when they start with one.
Yeah, and just how that changes also their math versus heavies when they're like, cool, okay, you not just have your power 15 swing for showing up, but you get a buy and a boost as well. And you're like, really? Really?
Anyway,
yeah.
I don't want this to be anti-Circle, because I actually like a lot of the releases that came in Circle. I don't think Bridget and Call are over the top. I think I like Lord of the Fears. I think he's interesting. I think he's a cool model. And I think with a slight, small tweak, we don't have to do a Karchev Mad Dog nerf on him. I think we just need to just do a, like a little, like he's at, he, like right now he's at a, like a 10 or 11, and we just need to push him down to like a 9 or an 8, which is much more acceptable, and it's still at the top of the range of the game, but isn't so far out of the way that people are just like, what the fuck is going on?
The simple fact is, Lord of the Feast, I mean, this is the kind of what you don't want, is Lord of the Feast is a mini-game
within the game,
which like, is a word or like a phrase that's been thrown around a couple of times. But in Lord of the Feast's case, it's literally the case. Like,
and
Lord of...
a game within the game isn't a problem as long, because I think that's what you find in Convergence, because their entire focus mechanic is a game within the game. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because it's a more thought-provoking way for both players to play, but it's on the behest of the active player playing with Convergence to make sure that it works properly.
Mm.
Well, Lord of the Feast is... not on, like, the way you have to think around Lord of the Feast is not on the
The
mental load is on the reactive player, the person playing against the circle, rather than on the circle player, because the circle player is walk 6 inches, shoot the bird, and kill whatever it wants.
Yeah, because, I mean, easy example of that is, like, so there was a thing going around about your way of countering Lord of the Feast involving making a shield guard and then surrounding a shield guard with so many models that you cannot physically place Lord of the Feast down.
That's a lot of...
I've done it, and I've tried it, and it works on turn one if they can't displace or kill any models.
But that's like...
And that's it. That's literally... You're like... And
those
then,
models have to do work eventually.
Well, not just that. It's also like, cool, there's another thing Lord of the Feast can do, which is instead of going YOLO and all in, he can...
Wait.
Not. He can just wait.
That's the problem, is once I got good at playing around Lord of the Feast, my opponent just waited till there was a turn that it's literally impossible to stop.
Yes.
Because eventually the game reaches a point where Lord of the Feast and your stuff are so close that he could literally charge it if he really wanted to, but why would he bother when he could get to a much more annoying place by shooting the bird?
No, I've seen where Lord of the Feast charges in and then throws his bird at the charge model to jump behind it. You're like, there's a lot of things you can do, but again, like, this is, these kind of interactions... I think one of the main problems with CID is, like, this kind of shit actually doesn't really come up in a timely fashion with the 3 weeks you've got to test it. And furthermore, you don't have rules to muck around with
in most cases,
it's okay, but in
most cases, I think 3 weeks is long enough. It's just... And I can understand why they sometimes have to go, like, it might not be ready as is, but we don't have any more time because they have a schedule.
Yeah.
And eventually, they do need to take breaks from it. But honestly, I think the most unbalanced thing they've released is Tharn. And I think that's just because a lot of the changes they made happened at the end of week 3. And it was just like, we have no time to test this.
The mechanic change, the change to Lord of the Feast, where Lord of the Feast finally ascended to his full form. The corpse mechanic change actually is a huge one.
So I like more how they did it with this one, where instead of doing all of the crazy over-the-top changes... At the end of the week with Infernals, we literally got to saw, like, oh my god, this stuff is, like, fucking great.
All the busted.
We saw the bust at the very beginning, and then we worked our way... We're working our way
backwards,
down, or... Yeah, backwards is probably not down. Where Tharn was just like, this is okay, this needs fixing, this is great, this is okay, this needs work. Oh my god, what the fuck? And then it was, like, end of testing.
Yeah, and testing's
done. And that's how we're like, oh god, what happened?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just the changes...
So yeah, I would like PP maybe to, like, start at the high end and work down rather than work their way up, because it seems to be like sometimes they just do really drastic over-the-top changes. You're like, oh my god.
I mean, if you want the other example of that even more recently is the Wolves of Winter difference, where with 3 days to go, we got changes to 10 models, basically. All of the Grey Lords got changes. The Colden Lord and the Colden Lord that got a completely new mechanic. The Turnian picked up a brand new spell, which was Brittle Frost or Cancer Frost.
Yeah, but I think they took those 3 days and they actually made changes, where with the Tharn they didn't really. Because now Cancer Frost is not on the unit,
it's on the
Colden Lord.
Yes.
And so the Colden Lord being able to steal spells is... Now instead of having like 11 Canker Frost.
You have two. And they're very... they also can't be apparated. Yeah, sorry, Cadal players. That one probably was on me. I remember definitely having to talk about it. But seriously, like, that one, though, it's not really good beta testing, though, when you think about it. Like, the whole point of having even your three-week timeline is to make sure that if you're doing drastic changes, you should have some lead-up to it. Which, to be fair, is something they've done in Infernals to this day quite well. Like, I think they've We've identified it.
I mean, we still have a week to go as of where we are right now. And who knows? They might drop a large, like, super change on us again.
That's true, yeah. Like, I mean...
We're still in the Infernal CID. Yeah. We don't know how it'll end up.
I mean, let me be honest. Like, this cast releases on our Thursday, which means that when we release...
And it's recorded on the Sunday.
Which means that when we release it, we'd be like, oh, man, PP did a good job of not doing anything crazy right as they do something crazy. So, you're welcome, Internet.
Anyway, this is, like, probably not my favorite podcast because it's just so much fucking speculation and talk. Like, this feels like a subject I'd rather write as an essay and release rather than, like, this, like, weird ad-libbed conversation.
Agreed. Like, CID, to be fair...
Because there are super, like, overall, and I'm going to reiterate what Tom said at the beginning, overall, I think it's been good for the game. I think it's a much better system than what they had before. I do think it has problems. I do believe it has had some repercussions on the community. And I believe it has had, and we're going to go here now, I believe it has had a negative effect on the casual on the casual players.
I agree, actually. Very much.
I think,
because it's a lot harder to keep track of.
Yes, when Gatsby 2 was God for all of Mark 2, every casual player knew that Gatsby 2 was God. Now it's really hard to tell who's on the top of the meta.
Yeah.
And even what the meta is, because it shifts with almost every CID release.
I mean, there's...
And then they're also not probably following the CID cycle, so they're behind 3 or 4 months in terms of what everyone's expecting to come out. And while most people who follow the CID cycle won't technically know what comes out, they'll have a very good idea of what to be preparing for, what they'll be looking at ahead of time.
Yeah, I agree, because...
Which is really frustrating for casual players, because they walk in and they're like, what the fuck is this shit?
So, how can people then do better at following the CID, I guess, or, like, keeping up with these kind of meta changes? That might be a question for later. I mean, for now, I would say one thing I have noticed is that it's harder to hold on to pet lists. Like, this was something I definitely noticed during the WTC, was that you have to be willing to make changes all the time because of this. And that means that the old testing standards we used to do, I've talked about this after we won the second time round, was that you can't hold on to things because the meta changes so much. And for a casual player who's just like, oh, you know, I'll collect some models here and some models there.
Well, that was the weirdest thing about going from Mark 2 to Mark 3 is that we got into Mark 3, we got used to it, then CID themes started coming out, and you're like realizing, like, hey, these lists that have been working for me for the past couple months to a year are suddenly not. They're not keeping up.
Hmm.
And then as the CID has rolled out and people are adjusting to them, we were seeing more and more and more. You were updating your list. Casters that you were very happy with were suddenly not quite the meta staple that they were, and things were shaking up because certain theme forces were much better with certain casters. So we saw, like, people who thought that, God, what's her name? The Signar Battlebox caster.
Maddox?
Yeah, Maddox was fucking garbage. You were never going to play her. And then suddenly she became quite useful.
An overnight sensation randomly, yeah.
Because of a theme. And then so you actually started seeing people's pairings change and licks change, and that's still constantly happening, where some people are good enough where they can kind of stand in the meta, or they're, like, flexible enough where they can stand in the constant change, but even their lists will change. Like, even though they are going to be a constant, their list probably won't be.
Agreed, yeah. Especially, like, even on the simplest version, the points cost of the models in their list might change, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's happened a fair bit. I think, like, here's an example to me. So, these days, we here at Dark Guidance, generally speaking, dislike a lot of the Warjack themes, right? We find that most of them have big problems on scenario, they have problems effectively with efficiency, and there's a lot of counters, right? You need to sort of basically be...
There are exceptions, but there are exceptions for a reason.
Exactly. But when you think about it, nothing's actually changed with a lot of these Warjack themes. Like, what are the changes that have actually happened to, say, Creator's Might? Technically speaking, Creator's Might, which is the Menoth Protectorate Warjack theme, has just gotten buffs. Nothing but buffs. The Warjacks you have...
Scenario has a lot to do with Warjacks.
I agree.
Warjacks,
that's what I'm getting into, right? So, like, technically speaking, Creator's Might has only gotten better on Scenario because it now has access to Exemplar Waters. But because of the way War Machine now works, there's just so many more factors. Now, when you think about it in Mark II, right? First things first, War Machine is not like, say... We'll go with Magic, right? Magic, there are 5 colors. and you can splash a couple of colors, but generally speaking, everyone is playing with just five colors. War Machine, you have how many factions now? And then there are sub-factions within those factions. And then
every theme is technically a sub-faction.
And then, more importantly, unlike Magic, which has a bajillion players, War Machine doesn't. So you're going to get really your idea of the meta is going to be very heavily warped by what players are actually in it and what they are playing, right? Which is something we've said all the time. But in Mark II, that was already bad enough to follow and did result in a bunch of, different opinions on how certain things were going. Like, for instance, Eros 2 was always my baby, but I was the only one who ever, frankly, played him, right? But there are other ones, exactly how you evaluate certain factions, take Signa, for instance, right? A lot of it will come down to more realistically external factors, like what are the counters to Signa that exist? Who are playing those, and how good are they?
Can I play them in Infernals or not?
Yeah, that would be let me just briefly go aside. Seriously, horrors with, Haley 3...
Oh, no, that's not what I intended to happen.
Well, congratulations, that's not happening. So, but yeah, Signal base, there's a lot more at play now, because now when you think about it with CID and Mark 3, so, first of all, the scenario pack is dynamic. Second of all, the lists are more interesting, and there's just a lot more random models in the game. But also the models have their... not only is there the layer of complexity of the models themselves, but also how the themes interact with them in general. For all its good benefits of, changing to a theme development, I think it might have actually increased game complexity, not decreased it, like they wanted. I'm not 100% sure about that one, but...
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think... It might have increased game complexity, but I don't think it increased game complexity as a workload.
Mm.
I think design-wise, it's much simpler.
I agree.
But I do believe that you could make the argument that maybe the game is more complicated because you have to look at the game from so many places now rather than from only a few that we were seeing in Mark II. But I guess you can make arguments for that because you just literally had much more open lists in Mark II, where right now you can kind of predict what kind of lists you'll see. Because while themes
it was different in Mark II, see, because in Mark II, we've also said this a lot, lists were a lot more static. They didn't change
Yeah. But you could change them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you saw lists that could have existed months ago suddenly show up, and they were, actually really good, but people didn't explore them.
Yeah.
Because people were using net lists.
Elemental Evolution's an easy example.
Yeah, because that list existed for a while before people really caught on to how good it was.
Yeah, because it was just ooh, Mountain Kings. Actually, if you just strip out all the Mountain Kings.
And Warders and just play Light War Beasts. Yeah. That's a lot of value.
I mean, the first version I saw that was really dangerous was just take out the Mountain King and just have Warders and Light War Beasts.
That's what I was playing.
Then they were oh, actually, if you just take out the Warders, you get
and
even
that's
more.
What the Americans started playing.
Yeah.
Which is probably a better list. It's much more skewed, so it's much more powerful into certain matchups, but the Warder one was better into some of its worst matchups.
Mm.
But I think overall that the EE light spam was probably more powerful. That's why we saw it everywhere.
Possibly.
But you could make the argument that it was fine to play the Warder version because you were better into your worst matchups, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. But
and Warders were broken as fuck.
So just to recap, we've just had a 30-second, quite actually, honestly, detailed derail, and I like it because I have some thoughts on that as well, about a list in Mark II that was a theme force, so incredibly straitjacketed, that was in one faction of, again, 13+, that was not properly explored until, I'd say about 5 months after its initial release. That's the kind of complexity we're dealing with, and that, I think, might be a problem for... It's something I think people have to have a plan.
I don't think there's a cure for that, though.
No, I agree. Especially with the direction they've decided to go with this whole dynamic update business. So, again, in order to get something productive out of this beyond... more CID talk. I'm actually curious, what do you think people can do to try and keep up with these changes, especially if they're more casual like Brian?
That's really hard to say because it's not a community that I'm super involved with. I mean, you can talk about some of the guys that we have here who are not casual, but they don't follow the CID.
Yeah.
And it's essentially like it's too much effort. You don't know what the actual results are. You just do the testing. They're not interested in the testing. They're actually interested in results. And that's fine. You can completely ignore CID.
Agreed.
And then just wait for model releases, and essentially you get the exact same kind of experience without like the hype buildup that you got in Mark II.
I mean, this one is...
That is something I do miss about Mark II, is just like model releases were much more exciting because you had no idea what you were expecting. CID prompted us, and we know what stuff does 3 to 4 months in advance.
Can you imagine the release of the Blockader? The Blockader, for those not aware, is that pirate rocket fist colossal...
The Galleon.
The Galleon version. You're like, oh my god, pirates have a colossal with rocket fists.
Yeah, that's kind of gone from the game, which I think is also something that detracts from the casual audience because there's nothing to be surprised about.
I mean, I remember being...
I guess you can make the argument that they would always be surprised now because they don't follow the CID, but it's kind of hard to be part of the community and not kind of understand what's going in CID completely.
Yeah.
Like, you're not completely blind to it, you just don't follow it.
Exactly. And so it's just really like, hard, you're gonna see, like, oh, here's a picture of a chariot, right? Or, like, you know, there's...
That's cool, you'll ask about it, people will tell you kind of what it does, and then it'll disappear for 3 months and it'll be on the shelves, and people will be like, yeah, I'll buy it.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of very different from, say, when War Machine Weekend, I think it was, like, 2013 or something, whenever, I think it was Reckoning was released, and we were like, we in Australia were waiting, staying up, waiting for the Americans who bought Reckoning and had their photographs, just photograph all the pages and go through it and get us the sweet hits.
Or take pictures of the cards of the pre-release models.
Yeah, and we're like, give it to us.
Yeah, it's a completely different experience now.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of miss that.
Yeah, I kind of do. Because, I mean, it's a very community thing. People are very hype. Like, the last time that kind of, like, existed was Mark III beta. When all the beta documents got released.
Yeah, I remember. That was kind of like... I mean, the other one I'd say was when UNO 2 got released, because that was a very similar deal. But that was immediately prior to CID. Because I remember we getting the box, and then we taking photographs, and then Tom coming to me at War Machine Weekend. That was the one I was there at. And he's like, oh my god. In his traditional manner. I'm kind of annoyed he's left us now, because I wanted him to recreate it. But yeah... I think for casual players who, for whatever reason, are listening to this cast, but more importantly, who want to know a way of, like, trying to keep up with these CID changes, I think the first thing to understand is that, again, a lot of CID is very subjective, and it just gets hyperbole all over the place. Like, so imagine you're just minding your own business.
I mean, Lord of the Feast is OP, but, I mean, he's not so fucking broken that he deserves an entire... Facebook group named after him.
I don't know. I disagree, actually. Mostly because I think he's transcended balance, and he's now just meme level, just, you know, in his...
He's transcended balance. He's now a meme.
Yep, exactly. And memes cannot be killed, like ideas. But yeah, like, people will complain all the time about random models, so there is some benefit to just, like, not caring about it. I would say in general, though, like, one of the better ways to follow along with how models are sort of going is actually to read the PP developer notes. Whenever any kind of update goes out, just read them. Even if it's got nothing to do with your faction, for one, you might see some surprise changes in your faction, but two, it actually gives you a very good idea of what they're trying to build with these models. Because when they're making these models...
They have an idea or a concept... And sometimes that concept will be adjusted in terms of how the rules actually play out, but usually they kind of follow a theme of what they want it to do overall.
Agreed, yeah. And they kind of also give good reasons why they make certain changes, so you don't feel like... I mean, there's nothing worse than reading, like, batch balance notes from an old RTS game, and you're like, why was the damage output on this gun, like, the seemingly weird change done? Like, why, right? For instance, if anyone played Company of Heroes, there was a random change I remember they made to what was called the Sherman Crocodile, which is a flamethrower tank. And it was like, AoE damage output was decreased and AoE was increased and some other stuff would happen. You're like, it wasn't even that they coached it in such words. They used very different terminology. What it actually meant was that it was a straight buff. The Crocodile basically doubled the size of its flamethrower AoE. And the damage that got changed was actually the on-hit damage got decreased, and the, like, damage over time got massively increased. So what happened was people were just getting, you'd have all of your German troopers just getting roasted alive by this model that, quote, got nerfed. And they're like, why was this change even made in the first place? People were already running crocodiles anyway, right? And they're like, oh, well, you know, reasons? And for second of all, why make it in such a way? PP, on the other hand, unlike, say, Relic back then, are much better at communicating the reasons why they make changes. You can disagree with them if you want. Frankly, we've had an entire cast here explaining why people do, right? But at least they have some consistency with their logic. You can disagree with it or not. I know I'm about to get yelled at because I said those words, but there you go. And even then, they, generally speaking, have to cater for an entire community. For how you can follow it as well, which isn't necessarily following the PP notes and waiting for the anvil to drop. Frankly, you can see memes floating around, and this one's a bit of a funnier idea, but if people are talking about certain models, that's usually the ones you should probably pay at least a little bit of attention to. That one's a...
That's hard, because sometimes you see the models that don't get paid attention to tend to be the ones that sometimes become the most...
busted, yeah?
Yeah, because they never got the attention.
Mm.
So there's the attention-grabbing ones, and then there's the subtle ones that aren't made very obvious.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say the other thing, too, is if you're in a community that's a more casual-based one, and you want to keep up with the CID changes, especially if they don't relate to your faction, talk to someone who does. Use someone else as the filter, because, I mean, frankly, that's how we act for even Jack, right? Like, Jack wasn't following the CID at all for almost any of them, except, I think, Menoth. And it makes sense, right? The guy plays Menoth.
Yeah, right. He'll just wait for us to, like, either...
Give him the Cliff Notes version.
And, or send him a PDF, and then he might look at it.
Yeah, briefly. But again, like, that's the kind of thing you'd probably be wanting to do. You, like, first of all, someone who plays that faction will give you a much better idea of what's actually going on than the internet, which is always going to be a big thing, right? Because, again, like, most CID reaction tends to be overblown one way or the other. This model is too underpowered, please buff it. Or this model is so busted... please nerf it. And it's kind of tricky to get a good balance of the two, especially if you're not really paying attention. All you can really go on is effectively what people tell you, and that's not really the best course of action.
And if you aren't a casual player and you do follow CID regularly, all I can do is tell people not to take the whole like process personally, and don't tribal it. Don't, like, go, like, oh, man, this is my faction. I want it to be super good. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I get the buffs. And then anybody who comes in to say otherwise is against me. That's not the point. That's not the goal. The goal is that we're supposed to discuss, come out to terms. And sometimes the stuff that's going in won't go the direction you want it to. And people shouldn't go into other people's cities. And I don't think this is the actual case ever. But I'll go in trying to sabotage it.
Yeah.
I honestly haven't met or seen anyone talking in that way. I have seen people talking about trying to get their CIDs buffed through.
I've seen people, like, this is less sabotage and more people injecting their own personal, like, criticisms into it. But again, like, if that comes across as you're asking this faction be a nerf because you don't like its playstyle, but you don't play that faction, then you're like, well, isn't that, like...
I think the more changes that we see in the game, the more interesting the game will be overall.
Mm.
So even if things that you don't like get buffed or things that you do like do, you're going to see changes and it's good. It's good for the game. So don't take it personally because all changes are generally good with a few exceptions.
I think I will say one thing.
I'm not describing this the way I want to. I'm just saying
it's a tricky one though, because again, like a lot of like this kind of CID, like even the concept of balance is very much of a personal question. Like, there's going to be personal biases involved.
Sure, of course.
And how you want the game balanced, because there's, like, a lot of extremes. Like, basically, damage is an easy one. Like, how much damage you want to exist in the game, because the less damage in general exists, the slower the game goes, right? And that suits a lot of people. A lot of people like that.
Some people like a sandpaper style.
Yeah.
And some people like really fast, dynamic action.
And we've just lost Tom Gone Forever because Tom's like, no, I want to kill people. I want to kill them fast and now, and I want to go to this anime concert. And if you're going to make the game slower, I can't make it to my concert. Stop holding me up.
I mean, Tom Gone's always played fast and loose.
Exactly, yeah. easy. What was an example? I was going to say easy example, and then I couldn't think of it. Ooh. All right. Again, like, how do you like gun lines, for instance? Right.
Some people hate them. Some people like them. I get it. I just want people to understand, like,
yeah.
Be passionate, but don't be dicks. That's a general rule of thumb, though.
Just don't be dicks.
Don't go into it trying to be a dick. Don't try and go in it about ruin something. Don't try and go in and game the system. That's not what it's about.
Really, actually, just don't game the system. I mean, I'm not going to lie. One of the most disgusting things I saw was the Scorn CID recently. And that's because it was just full of gatekeeping. Gatekeeping being the term of just like, I haven't seen you post X, Y, and Z about Scorn, so you're clearly not a Scorn player, so you're not entitled to an opinion. I'm like,
that is incorrect.
Are you for fucking serious?
Everyone gets an opinion because everyone's going to play games against Scorn, whether they want to play games against Scorn.
Furthermore,
that's a different question altogether, but they still get an opinion on how the faction should play.
Furthermore, that's a very important thing. You don't want opinions of just people playing Scorn.
Because you get a biased result.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, well, if you get one, I mean, easy examples is Infernal stuff. If you just get the opinion of the people playing with the Infernal models who want the Infernal models down the line, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, summoning, great, no problems. Well,
that is one of the benefits of playing one of these factions is because people aren't so emotionally invested.
Yeah.
With the new factions, they tend to get a much more balanced overall discussion because people want to play. People want to play against it. People don't generally have they don't have preconceived ideas of how it should or how it shouldn't play. So they get introduced to it and then make decisions based on that rather than going into a Scorn CD and deciding Scorn has been on the down. We need to bring it up, and anyone who says otherwise is wrong is not the proper way. It's not healthy.
Yeah, and I can't
because
say that.
I'm playing Scorn now. Scorn came out great through the CID, but I could definitely see where, like, you know, maybe +2 power on the huge base model was maybe a bit egregious. That model's fucking, like, disgusting. Like, the Supreme Gentleman is so good with so many rules. Like, he could get tweaked.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I remembered. So one of the things I do dislike about CID is the increase in model complexity in general. And on a lot of different models. Some models, frankly, deserve to have complex interactions. But I don't... A lot of them... I don't know about every model. And there's just a lot that have been coming out that I think are a bit too much. Like, think about what the Trident does, what the Guardian, Supreme Guardian does, what the Church does. Frankly, a lot of the things we talked about the later part.
Sure, but so I can see why the Church needs to be complex because
it's a structure.
It's a structure, so you need to have interesting rules or people will take it.
Oh, side note, and as Shoutback, we fucking called it Fernal Gate. Amazing model.
Trident, yeah, that has that, like, just placement effects are.
I mean,
when
you think about how many fucking rules that thing has, like, and also just all the gatekeeping, the bookkeeping you've got to do, like, it's. From a, like, actual design, like, design for usability thing, the thing is actually terrible. You have to roll 4d3. Basically every time.
The problem with those two, and we've talked about it before, we talked about Battle Engines, both Battle Engines, the Supreme Guardian and the Trident, are models that exist in multiple themes.
Yes.
And they just fit there, like, seamlessly because their rules are just not typed. And I don't know about the Trident, but I can kind of see why that happened with the Supreme Guardian now, because the Scorn one, from my understanding, from what I've learned since, they got, like, 3 models in that, plus some, like, legacy, plus a bunch of legacy changes.
The Immortal CID,
but
yes.
That's because the Immortal CID wasn't the intended CID. It was a replacement CID because of reasons that PP had that they had to adjust their schedule. So Immortals got put in, so that's why they didn't get a caster, that's why they only got 3 models, and well, it fits really well in that theme. They only got 3 models to kind of, like, make that theme do anything.
Yeah,
because before that theme was just I run Immortals forward and I make them incorporeal +3 defense and Zol 2 feats on them, so they're +5 armor.
And
while the theme hasn't changed much, it has become more complex and more interesting because you've added recursion, you've added arc nodes, you've added tough a knockdown.
Yeah, and a damage buff that even applies on solos is nice, and obviously
yes.
The Guardian
It's much better. Like, I like that it exists because it's actually really useful for those solos because they're one's power 14, one's power 13, and that's quite low. And with that type of list, you don't actually, because your model options are Hakkar, Guardians, Immortals, and support solos,
yeah.
and the Supreme Gentleman. So if you didn't have the Supreme Gentleman, at least your support solos, like not your support solos, so your Hakkar and Guardians can actually become like threatening.
Yeah.
They're 15 and 16, 16.
They kind of are supportish solos.
Well, they are. That whole theme is very supportive, self-sufficient, interesting. And I think that's why the Supreme Gentleman is a complex model, because you're having a much more limited kind of choice. Even for a lot of themes, you usually see more choice than what this theme has, especially a theme that has come out of CID. So I think that's why we've seen a lot of rules on it. And I think you could dial it back, like make it so it could only recur construct models, or you could do a couple things. I think we've talked about it in the previous cast, so I don't really want to go over it again.
Yeah.
But it is very good. I could see it being toned down, but I think I don't really want to take away some of that complexity, because that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. I guess I could buy that argument on the Supreme Guardian. I'm not 100% sure that same thing applies to the Trident, but that's a problem for another time. Regardless, though, it is true that a lot of the rules for CID... there's actually one thing I did think about as well. Like, there are a lot of more rules that are getting complex, but there's also the CID jokes that happen, because there's the same kind of rules that show up all the time. And I think the ones to me, it's like a trio of rules, right? And at least everyone will get two of them. Desperate Pace, Tactician, Battle Plans. Right? And that one might be doing the opposite.
Battle Plans? Don't you mean No Knockdown Tough?
True, yeah, that's the fourth one. Okay, so it's actually more like a...
Because Battle Plans, like I don't think Battle Plans is a bad rule. The other three are kind of like, kind of feel like token inserts.
Yeah.
Well, Battle Plans doesn't feel like a token insert. That just feels like an interesting way to give models access to rules that make you make choices. Well, No Talk Down Tough seems to be is one of them. Desperate Pace is another, and Tactician. Like, you usually get two of those three, or all of the three.
All of the three,
and those are. And I agree, those are token inserts that they use because they're easy, tough choices.
Mm.
So they give threat range, or they give No Knockdown Tough is it, an attrition value, gives additional attrition value, and what was the third one?
Desperate Pace, which is
we already talked about threat range.
Yeah.
No Knockdown Tough.
And
Tactician, which gives you board control.
Yeah,
because
so
you literally control your side of the board.
This was always my personal... like, annoyance was just, like, a lot of... There are some themes that just...
Like, okay, so we've seen... Sorry, I know.
Yeah.
Because I want to go into Tactician, because it relies completely back to the Infernals that we talked about at the beginning of this, and that is the horse dude has... Well, no, not him.
No. He now has it.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Now him.
But it
doesn't matter who has it, because it's just faction.
Yeah.
It's just Tactician faction, which is fucking retarded.
It's one of the reasons I think why cultists are so easy to use, is because you cannot jam yourself.
Like, Tactician is a fun, interesting rule in the right place at the right time, but sometimes it just feels like it's inserted because it makes it easy.
Yeah. Well,
but it's always typed, and so it's typed like to warrior models, it's typed to war beasts, it's typed to whatever.
Yeah.
But this time it's typed to faction, which literally means bleh.
I mean, getting back into Hearts of Darkness, one of the great things about Hearts of Darkness is that instead of having to take Hitch, that asshole trencher guy...
Why would you ever take Artanis?
Yeah, you could take Mordecai has just some... he has, like, reverse battle plans and some stuff. And, yeah, he also just has tactics casually. Everything.
Again, they did a lot of good, like, changes to those, like, solos. Because originally that guy had, like, three battle plans that you just... chose models and units rather than target them. So it means like he hides behind a forest target.
Actually, I hate to say it, but he still does that.
No, they changed it to choose.
No, they've cleaned it up. Oh, no, I see what they've done. They've actually said choose a model in its line of sight. So you don't...
Okay.
You have to look at it and it has to still be in its command range.
Sure, but before like he could stand behind a forest 10 inches away and model on the other side of the forest in a unit suddenly like that unit doesn't get... Battle
orders.
You're like, how the fuck did he do that? It's like, because he knew where they'd be on the battlefield because he snuck into their tents and looked at their plans.
He's
like, no,
it
fuck
up.
That. That's
he cinched
stupid.
It up. He cinched it up so
all
many.
All according to plan. Steepled fingers.
And then here's another example of themes adding complexity. So yeah, that's very strong, like that 10-inch like no orders thing. Made stronger by the fact that that theme also gives all settlers repo 3.
Oh god, 13 inches.
Yeah, just like, wow, alright. So even if you...
Like, I literally, like, did whatever I could to kill that model.
Yeah.
Like, I saw, it was like one of the few models I got to kill in that game that stayed dead.
Yeah. It's good times.
Because fuck that guy.
Yeah. But again, like...
And then you just can't kill the horse, because that guy's like, -5 range to guns. I know...
He's minus five range. The list probably has Umbral Guardians in it to protect him, and he's worth protecting, because he's just a cool guy.
All right, because they can only... So that was one of the decisions I did not like.
It was the Umbral Guardian
Yeah,
one.
Where they went from a really interesting model to this, like, well, here's a way to, like, change it, so that's just really boring and dumb.
Oh, no, they changed it back.
Now, oh, they did? Now yeah. It's dumb again?
No. Now you can't Shadow Guard, or whatever the name is, you can Shadow Guard models that are not Umbral Guardians.
Sure.
So you can't chain it, which was hilarious and completely fucked, but you can still protect your horrors.
I also wouldn't mind the change of the turn that they appear, they can't Shield Guard as well.
Yeah, that's also kind of dumb. Anyhow,
so you get double dip.
We are talking about specifics of the CID again, but I do think that they really need to come up with ways of differentiating master tacticians, quote unquote, that isn't just giving the tactician rule. Because
at least keep it typed, like Jesus Christ.
Or at least keep it typed.
I mean, like because the reason why severely... one of the reasons why Othram's so dumb is because he has a typed one, but it might as well not be typed.
He has a typed one that works on Warjacks, which is insanely rare.
Well, no, because it's typed to just like Rulic, which is essentially pointless.
It's almost like typing it to Infernals, right? Yeah. And again, like it's
well, no, because it's worse. Infernals is like you might get models that might not necessarily Infernals. It just says faction.
Yeah, I mean. Mortisi worked with, again, no need to talk about the Heart of Darkness because so many things wrong with that, but this is one of those things, right? Is that,
well, those souls are so OP, and then you got to play them in real factions.
Yeah, I mean, effectively, I could give a Butcher, like, Tactician, he could charge through Warjacks or something like that. Anyway, the real kicker there is that they do, I think, need to have more ways to come up with more ways to differentiate master tacticians or strategy or stuff like that that isn't just handing out tactician. But I recognize in saying that that's actually really difficult when you think about it. Like,
okay, so you continue.
Oh, well, one of the better implementations I think is weirdly actually Baldwin. Like, Baldwin's one is specifically typed to a battle plan. He needs to activate first. And it means that if he's using that plan, he's not using his attack pump or his random retaliatory shot thing if he's, you know, got his catalytic
detonator. Well, it makes it an automatic passive.
But that is a rare example. And even then, like, Crucible Guard don't necessarily need tactician to function.
Well, mostly I think it's more for you can shoot through things because you can see through them now.
Yeah, agreed. Or you can unjam with your assault.
Another really interesting one is the Bane Knight one. Like, that one doesn't feel OP at all either because it's tagged to the unit.
Yeah, and it's specifically other models can see and go through it, but it's also on the officer, so it does add...
So you can remove it.
I can't remember, actually. I don't think you can. But even without it, like, you still... It is specifically with the one unit, right? It's not necessarily just army-wide casual tactician. Trust me, as someone who's played Eros 2 for the longest time, and whose primary reason I liked Eros 2 was martial discipline, the old tactician for warrior models for everyone rule... There's a good reason why that was one of his core strengths.
And now everyone seems to have it.
And it does... You can also tell the kind of models that it really is feels busted on and the ones that doesn't. Like, I've always thought, like, with Trenches, when they got Tactician, that felt very strong but appropriate, and it felt fairly costed because it was tied to a solo who was primarily there for Tactician and situational battle plans, and it made your Trench Buster game a lot better. Having Tactician on Tannis, I've always thought was insane for so many reasons. Command 12, the models are in Shield Wall anyway. The models are very much like he himself loves charging through people. It was so easy mode. Yeah, for what it's worth, Bane Knight guy is like Bane Knight, if you kill the Bane Knight, you do not get rid of the Tactician.
Okay, cool.
But again,
they have so many rules. Like, they have many rules.
There is another example of model complexity, which I'm not sure I necessarily agree with. Like,
that one I've played against, it feels fair. It feels really good.
Yeah.
So even though it has a lot of rules and you have to remember what those rules are, none of them feel so egregious or over the top, or even the combination of all of them feels bad.
Yeah.
That's a really nice model. That is a really nice, complicated, subtle model that's really interesting for the game and doesn't feel bad to play against.
Yeah, even though it has, like, five. Yeah. We had a game the other day.
But it's a really nice package.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And a lot of the rules are like, I mean, there's a lot of text on them, but they're quite low-key. And he still does exactly what you think on the tin. Repo 3, and he has Serpent's Coil, which is his mini-feat. The Desperate Pace I actually have less issue with, but it is kind of a bit of an easy fix, I think, for threat ranges. And again, like, there's a lot of random, it kind of devalues slow models when every model seemingly has access to Desperate Pace.
Yeah, but I think that's the type of game it is, because they want the game to be aggressive. You can't make things rely to put solely on defensive stats as much.
And also,
so you need to give them something to be attrition-y. And, like, being, like, even though they're slow,
yeah,
they are, they're not slow, but they are still slow in comparison, and if you can get rid of their Desperate Pace, they are slow, and then they don't, becoming fast only comes as a part of...
I think, actually, that's probably true. One of the things with Desperate Pace does, it does improve your scenario game a lot, which I think is important, especially given the way the role is going. So, you know what? On that triangle of random CID stuff it has, look, Desperate Pace when appropriate is probably a lot better. Desperate Pace when it's not appropriate,
the problem is, like, the reason why we consider Desperate Pace so, like, blah, is because we played against some people that are like, why are Kator themes that are so called slow, so not slow? And I'm just like, because they are. You have to be, like, on the other side of it. Like, it feels slow. It doesn't feel fast.
Try dealing with a fucking Wolf Rider champion.
Yeah, exactly, right?
And it's weird just how hard it is. But yeah, the other one, what was it? Tough No Knockdown. This one's a beautiful one, because, I mean, tough is a glorious mechanic that should be in more lists. Unfortunately, it probably shouldn't be in more lists.
I don't think we need to talk about it. I think people know the effects of Tough No Knockdown. Is not even that bad, but Tough No Knockdown can just be egregious in the right list.
I agree. I think the main...
That's why you see such, like, so much... That's why you see so much Takedown now and so much Grievous Wounds, because it becomes, like, it's the only way to answer that. Because it's really tilting sometimes, because it's just a dice roll.
Yeah, it's
like, it's a 40k save.
I think, realistically, what CID also sort of shows is, and this might be something just outside looking in, but I think Privateer Press probably need to have a look and think about ways to make models, basically... make tactician battle plan models that don't revolve around just giving out the tactician rule. Sort of like making models interlinked more. Like, that's why I like... You're right. The Bane Knight guy is a much more interesting implementation of that than, say, someone like Mortisi or Fallen Knight or whatever we are now. Even compared to models that are more theme-based. And similarly speaking, this one is actually going to be quite difficult. But trying to come up with ways of making models more difficult to remove... that don't involve No Knockdown Tough. Because stats, given how fatal the game is, stats are really difficult to do. And, like, to some degree, they've done this with Tharn, and this shows the other thing. Like, for all our complaints that defense doesn't really matter, weirdly, with...
Tharn, it does, but that's because it's, like... So defense matters more, not when it's like a small part of your list,
but
when your whole list
has it,
is a def skew.
Yeah.
That's when it's good. When you have to have quality attacks everywhere. But when it's quality attacks on a unit, it's a lot less valuable.
Agreed, yeah.
So that's why, like, because even though they can turn it really high, the flying guys and
Cruiser Rocketman?
The Rocketman. Because it's a single unit you have to worry about, it's a lot easier to deal with. And while it can be annoying for some lists, a lot of lists have a lot of easier time answering it because it's one thing they have to worry about.
Yeah.
In Tharn, it's the list. They're all def 13
actually,
or up.
There's a very big difference as well now that I think about it, and that's that Rocketman, you know, you can leave Rocketman alive. They're designed that even if you can't...
You can't ignore Tharn.
You cannot ignore Tharn. It's like, you can leave Rocketman
especially with Iona, because Iona, like, turns the problem up to, like, 100. Yeah. Because that's why she's so good, is because she's the numbers girl, but she puts the numbers in the right places.
Yes.
So she has these Tharn who threat 11 base, 14 if you damage them. But the problem is, if you damage one, doesn't necessarily do any more work after that. Because in a forest with Surefoot on, they're death 17.
Yep.
Against melee and against range attacks, unless you ignore concealment. But even then, they're still death 15. And if you miss, they dodge farther into the forest, which means could be possibly out of your line of sight, but not theirs because they can see through forests.
And they get a vengeance, even if they couldn't. They could just vengeance around.
They're really strong.
So, like, no knockdown tough on immortals feels quite appropriate and well-conceived. Like, the model giving tough has a low command range, is not an immortal himself, and can be sniped out. It gives value to casters like, say, Xerxes 1, who have Tactician baked in natively for being able to run him more aggressively. It means that even your brick of immortals that are unkillable with Zal 2 is going to have its weaknesses because it cannot place that guy as effectively.
I almost never use it for the tough.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it feels like I'll just lose it and it has other uses.
Yeah.
Like healing my battle engines, like giving the damage when I need it.
Yeah,
but again, tough is the one that I don't rely on because in that list I actually kind of want them to die, so it's...
Yeah, exactly. Whereas with Tharn, your fucking no knockdown top is so much more dangerous because of just the way Tharn work. And, I mean, you heard us then, but even if you have other examples include just Grail's Tharn Ravagers going on adventures, as we've dubbed them, where they just go places. Even... No, knockdown tough, I think, is just one of those rules where probably we need to come up with something different. And I always thought that...
That one's a harder one, because it's really hard to make...
Like, even just, like, having more feign death tough might be an interesting one to do.
With Rise.
Feign death.
Because people have... They put Rise out into the game, like, there's, like, you have Rise, and you have Rise on theme forces.
Yeah.
But then almost nobody uses it well, except for the Ogryn.
Except for Trenches.
And Ogryn.
And Ogryn, yeah.
But then you look at it in Grimkin, and only recently did you finally get a model release where you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then still for the rest of the faction, it doesn't do anything but except for one unit.
Exactly.
And it's not the unit with tough.
No, it's not.
It's a unit that just knocks itself down.
It's a unit that likes to take naps. And you're like, ugh. I mean,
Pumpkin Man.
For what it's worth, the unit we talked about, Nayslayers, that actually is a mechanic I do like. That's a different way of doing that kind of no-shooting shit.
But gives it weaknesses to melee because then they automatically die.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also... It's a risk-reward mechanic in that particular case as opposed to just a fucking reward-reward mechanic.
Okay, like, so we've talked about the Triumvirate.
Yeah.
But there's one more that I want to talk about because it's actually relevant to the first topic.
Mm-hmm.
But we totally missed it.
Oh, yeah?
And that was PP's total, like, kind of like, it's their weird, what's the way to say it? Like, the barrier they put up. So when they released the Infernals, they're like, okay, Infernals are not, and Horrors are not War Beasts and Warcasters. So there's going to be lots of rules in the game that just won't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just totally going to be ignored. And you know what? For the most part, I'm like, that's fine. That makes sense. They are an alien species, essentially, that has come in. So a lot of the tactics and skills and things that we've seen are just not going to work. And that's fine. That makes sense. Except when it doesn't.
Yes.
And sometimes it just feels like they made a couple changes. They made some adjustments. So things will now say Horrors or will say Masters.
No, non-Infernal Masters. So, for instance, like, you can't befuddle an Infernal Master.
Can't Abyssal Gate an Infernal Caster, that kind of stuff. But it just seems like part of that feels like it's because they're just like, fuck it. We don't want to change every rule in the game. And sometimes I'm like, you don't have to. But then you look at some things and you're just like, well, if there's an entire faction now that ignores this person's feat and it's literally the reason why you play it, a la Morgul one, who's like, I'm a 10-inch control because my feet is supposed to be fucking disgusting.
And now it does disgusting.
Yeah,
like,
but it doesn't affect Horrors and it doesn't affect Masters, so it doesn't do anything.
And then this is where I see the barrier part, because it's a case of, no, we're not changing anything. You're like,
but then
really?
They do.
And then sometimes they do, and then sometimes they don't.
And
like,
the choices that they make, like Nima 1's feet now damages Horrors, but it doesn't do anything but like a power 13, so I'm like, why bother with that one?
Yeah, so for instance,
why
like,
that?
Loke, for instance. Like, Loke's feet does nothing apart from the purification effect. Like, it has no effect interaction with essence. You're like...
Well, no.
Okay, maybe that makes sense.
If you cast spells.
You cast spells, you get a catalyst token. And then, like, okay, I guess. And then maybe the fact that...
Again, but that's one of the ones where you can kind of like, it's alien.
Maybe it's because it's non-Euclidean magic, sure. All right, fine. Again, fair enough.
Like, you can make that argument every time.
You can, yeah.
And like, you can, but, like, there's also, like, you can't steal souls with,
Oh, yeah, that's right.
From Hexy 2, and his feat is not good.
Yeah.
But his feat doesn't work. And you're just like, but it barely does anything.
Yeah.
Like, why make it, like, it's just...
And before like, we think this
I
is just
wish they'd be more willing to engage, yeah. or at least go through it all, make informed decisions, but just right now. And maybe they did, but the way they've kind of, like, interacted with the community about it is just like, no, we're done.
Yeah,
it's finished.
I mean,
don't talk
is,
about
this
it.
This is 100% like how Hellmouths came across and how a whole lot of other
and like
things.
That, that doesn't,
people were, like, complaining. Like, if, people scapegoated on Jason Saul so hard on this as well.
And so, for the community, that just feels like garbage. Like, it's just like, well, we're trying to talk to you about this, and you're just, like, sandbagging us.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel good on our end, and we're like, this is supposed to be community integrated, but you're literally just saying, no, that's not a problem,
it's
and we're
like, no, shut up. I mean, another example would be, like, Venothrax. Venothrax's feat literally does nothing to Infernals. You're like, yeah, all right, fine. You know,
Morgul 1's feat does one thing.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it stops transferring.
Boom!
To the horrors, because it doesn't specify, yeah. I'm pretty sure. So it kind of, I guess it does that, but like, there's just so many things in the game that are just like Warbeast,
and see, this Warjack, isn't also...
and that's fine sometimes, but you have to look at it and go, when I paid the points for this model, or this Warcaster, or I made this decision, is that a time for a horror or master exemption? You just can't just say all of it, because the whole game is fucking predicated on Warbeasts and Warjacks, and so when you add a third thing in, you can't just be like, fuck it.
You can't
it
do
gets
a half,
an exception.
You can't do a... No, you could, as long as you don't do a half-assed job about it, which is exactly what this feels like. They picked the two most primary rules they could think of, which is Befuddle and Abyssal Gate, or spells, I should say. They picked one casual feat, and the rest are like, eh, whatever. Like, here's an example. It's not necessarily for the good of Infernals, but here's the one for the bad. So, you can have your Infernal Master fucking TK'd around, or moved around... by Thexus's feet.
No, I thought you couldn't anymore.
No, you 100% can. They've not fixed that yet.
Oh, okay.
And you're like, why? Okay, cool. Oh, even worse, you can be moved around by, wait for it. He's, just for reference sake, listeners at home, he,
Sturgis.
Thexus, fuck, I was gonna get into it. I was gonna say Thexus was
you're so fucking slow.
Fine. Sturgis. Like, Sturgis can move him. Why?
Yeah, Sturgis coming into the meta, guys, when it's all that whole
that's
all
how
that
you
Infernal
know, that's,
tech.
That's how you know that, you know,
CID works
is now, Sturgis is good. But again, like, Sturgis' feat randomly works on Infernal Masters when it doesn't work on any, like, any other Warcaster or Warlock equivalent, right? You're like, why? Why?
Because you didn't want to type it? Because you didn't think about it? Because you won't let us test it?
Well, again, like, even we could say, like, hey, you probably should just add an exception to this, and then the correct response is probably, we'll think about it, not,
which is what it feels like.
Yeah. And that one might be, like, I mean, I can understand just wanting to tell people, just like, please, just test the Infernal shit, we'll think of this later, just, duh.
Yeah, but that's not what community integrating is.
It also is not how it comes across, which is one part of how it's important. Final example, by the way, is Hierarch Severus can set an Infernal, like, just feat on a master, which is much more relevant
than... Can
you
take control of it?
No.
Damn,
because... They specifically added, like, the Inscrutable as the we've thought of everything kind of rule.
No, so you can never take control of a master.
Yeah, you cannot.
They're inscrutable.
It. Yep, correct. But Hierarchs,
but he's a scrutator.
Yeah, well, he doesn't do that anymore, remember? Instead, he just sets them on fire and barbecues them. So, yeah, you can just, like, use Fires of Communion on Infernal, like, masters casually, which, again, is quite relevant considering how flimsy a lot of them are. Yeah, it's just... This one, I've seen seen it happen in previous CIDs, and again, the one that really sticks out to me is Hellmouths, but I'd say I kind of wish there was less of it, but... I
can see why the developers sometimes have to go, hey, that's not what we're testing, slow down, we're not talking about this, but this feels, like, really important to the game.
This is exactly the kind of core mechanic.
This is a core thing. We're talking about Warjacks, Warbeasts, and now... X that you've added, and X can't just be like ignored. It can't just be, like, written in with, like, pencil on the side and people are like, yep, that's going to be in the test.
Yeah, for instance.
Because it's going to be in the test, but you can't just expect it if someone wrote it in pencil on the side of the textbook.
I mean, the whole reason you even have beta testing, generally speaking, in real programs...
It's for this shit.
It's exactly for this shit. So, for instance, why exactly does, like, say, Severius not work on undead horrors... But not work. I mean, by Severius, I mean P. Severius does not work on Infernal Masters. Like, exactly why? And is it actually that big a deal if he does reduce their essence by two? Not really. Like, maybe with Oboe's case, but like, cool, great. Yeah, peeve over that.
I mean,
one.
This also might be honestly part of the Oblivion because we're going to see crossovers between faction. Yeah. This faction and others, so maybe that's what that's... Maybe that'll be a key for that. Or maybe it's not. Right now, we don't know, and we're just not getting what people would consider a reasonable response.
Yeah, exactly.
Which kind of feels shitty. And I don't kind of, like, completely blame PV for that kind, because sometimes you just gotta be like, fuck it.
Dealing with nerds is just annoying,
yep.
Period.
Yep.
That's all there is to it.
Not arguing with you, but it just kind of feels like shit.
Yeah.
And I wish they would just kind of, like, learn a little bit... better bedside manner in that case. Like, sometimes you just gotta be like, guys...
Let's be honest.
They have lots.
They've gotten better as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, overall, we've talked a lot about CAD. We've run around in a lot of circles. We've covered things more than once, multiple times. Some things dived into all kinds of different rants in other directions. This has been a fucking mess of a podcast in terms of topic.
I've loved it.
But... honestly, I'm going to say it again for, like, the fourth time. CAD is so far much better for the community. We're seeing some of the limitations of it in this new Infernal CID because Infernals is so weird, because it's so different, and because we're working... And, like, you also have to remember, PP as a company changes constantly as well. We've seen people come, we've seen people go, we've seen people take different roles, and that's going to also change the way they interact with us and the game. And that's also going to be possibly part of what's happening in terms of what's happening with CAD, because different people are having their fingers in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So CAD is in general a net positive. I think it's very good for the game. I think it's generally good for the competitive community. I don't know if it's great for the casual community. So maybe that's something PP needs to look at going forward. It has its problems. It has its benefits. I think it's good for the game. And I hope any problems it has can be addressed, looked at, and maybe adjusted.
But frankly, I hope it improves. But not in the sense that I hope it gets fixed. It's more like, I hope it gets better. Like, as in, it keeps adding more value to the game.
There's also only one more thing really left.
Mm?
We don't know where the game is going after this CID. So we know there's Infernals. We know there's Oblivion. We know that there's probably 2019, and then we literally know nothing.
Yeah.
I don't think they've spoiled anything in terms of...
There might be some stuff, there might be a CID for Riot Quest minis, but I don't think so.
Sure. But again, we don't know any future themes. Yeah. We don't even know if CD will continue past this point, because it may be PP, like many of the other things they've tested and tried, has run its course, and they're like, okay, now it's time to move with a different thing.
We interacted with nerds, and we found it terrible, and now we've decided not to do that again.
But again, we don't know what's coming. Maybe they're going to, after this set of CIDs that we know that the foreseeable future, they'll move into a new way of handling it.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll move into a new type of program. Maybe they'll do it in smaller amounts. Maybe they'll do it in bigger amounts. Maybe they'll give it longer times. Maybe we don't know.
Mm.
So we're only talking about the current CID, which is in the halfway point through the Infernal CID. That could easily change for whoever is listening to this in the future and listening to us and going, these guys are fucking morons. I mean, people in the present might be saying that. But anyway, like... thank you for listening to us rant and rave about this fucking nonsense and about Kid.
Sid. Well,
CID. Kid, Sid.
As is probably evident from that rant that we just had just then, realistically, a lot of CID is quite personal. Like, how you think about it, what your different opinions on what makes a model good or fun to play against or even interesting in general. So, there's just a lot to talk about and a lot that is... basic personal opinion.
But I've tried not to talk about it, except that, like, we did a bit during the Grimkin CID.
Yeah.
But in general, it's really hard to talk about with it because it's so not concrete. We're talking about something shifting and changing constantly. Yeah. So we didn't bother really to mention it. But we're like, with, like, as we said, we've seen kind of some of the limitations with the thing right now. Mm. And we're kind of hoping that PP has witnessed it too and seen what's kind of happening. We hope that they've, I don't think they'll ever listen to this, so I don't even bother why. But I kind of hope that they look at kind of what people are saying and looking at kind of like the valuable things people are saying and kind of ignoring the shit that's not valuable. And I mean, that's also like, God damn it, this is so fucking frustrating.
There is a lot to talk about, but again, like, there's so much personal opinion is tied
there
to the city. And when you get down to it, like, that is all there is to it. It's just basically, I do hope for the sake of PP that they have come up with ways of doing CID better, not because the system isn't really working, but because the system is currently adding value, and if you make it better, you add even more value to the game.
Right, that's a perfect way to put it. CID is working, but it could always use improvements because improvements will only make the game better for everybody involved. And I hope everybody will stop just being dicks to each other and just enjoy the game and the process.
And remember, kiddos, Lord of the Feast is out to get you. You're fucked.
Yay!